I've learned now that self-care is not selfish. When we get to start settling down after doing our late watch around the firehouse, when I go into my bedroom, I do a moral inventory of the day, of the shift. Well, also, when you see somebody and you talk to them, you ask them how they're doing. And the biggest lie in the world is, I'm fine. That's when people will start opening up, because they feel that Captain Moore is Chris Moore, and he's really vested in my well-being. He's not just asking me how I'm doing. He really cares about me and wants to know how I'm doing, how I'm feeling.
Welcome to another edition of Respond to Resilience. Along with Dr. Stacy Raymond, I'm David Dashinger. In this episode, we'll be speaking with Captain Chris Moore about adverse childhood experiences scores, otherwise known as ACEs, practical tools to help with our mental health, and the role of faith in first responder life, among many other topics. We invite you to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Respond to Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., and Responder TV, bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, and all the podcast platforms. And check out our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. We'll be right back to speak with Chris Moore after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job.
In this family, up to a quarter of 911 telecommunicators have symptoms of post-traumatic stress.
In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis,
while responders are quietly suffering.
In this family, many struggle with job-related stress,
burnout, trauma, sleep disruptions, substance abuse,
and relationship problems.
In this family, we can help the helpers
with vital information and resources,
resilience strategies,
and success stories of overcoming the obstacles.
In this family, no one is alone.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Wimley, LCSW, EMTB.
Our guest is Chris Moore. Chris was a captain with the Chesapeake, Virginia Fire Department with over 30 years as a first responder, and he's also a national touring speaker. Chris has served in a variety of assignments, including firefighter, paramedic, field training officer, recruit school instructor, and he currently serves as a key member of his department's behavioral health and peer support team. Chris was formally diagnosed with post-traumatic stress related to his years of service in 2018. And in 2020, he decided that helping other first responders by sharing his journey in a completely open, honest, and transparent format was another way of giving back, and he started speaking at conferences and symposiums across the country. Chris, a warm welcome to Respond to Resilience.
Thank you, LT. Thank you, Doctor.
Sure. I'd like to start by asking you a little bit more information about your story. You know, what got you into helping other first responders?
So for the longest time, I think, and I'm finding this out from many other first responders as well, we feel like it's something, or I felt like it was something wrong with me when I started struggling. Mm-hmm. I went my entire career without sharing anything other than within the walls of the firehouse or the cab of the fire truck. Mm. And, I didn't have any healthy coping mechanisms. Like I said, I didn't do anything outside of it. I'd come home from work, and you would think that being gone 24 hours at a time, and I'm coming home and my wife is leaving to go to work, and she asked me how my day was, that I would have a lot of stuff to talk about that we did, but I just shut everything down. I didn't want to mm-hmm. discuss things or whatever. So I had no healthy coping mechanisms or anything like that. And once I finally did, as I guess we'll discuss in a little bit, reach out and get the help that I needed, I realized that I wasn't alone, that this was a common occurrence that was starting to become more prevalent within first responders of all of the different genres, for lack of better words there, whether it's law enforcement or fire. Mm-hmm. And once I realized that I wasn't alone, I felt a lot better. And that started to help with my healing process. That was just another component of it. So once I started getting the healing that I needed and getting on the right path, I just knew right away that this was something, a message that I needed to get out to other first responders and let them hear my story and stories of other people like myself that are going through it and persevering and just being so resilient. And every time I do it now, people come up to me or call me or text me or whatever, and they say the same thing that I said when I met with my therapist for the first time is, wow, I thought it was just me. They thank me for sharing my story, and letting them know that they're not alone. They tell me that my story is actually their story. There's so many similarities. So that's a lot of encouragement that I mm-hmm. get. It's healing for me as well, but it's healing for them also, or the beginning of healing.
Let's talk a little bit more about your speaking and conferences, because we're seeing more and more a shift from someone getting in front of the room and doing a PowerPoint, which is kind of like very, you know, kind of mental, not very emotional, not very deep in terms of revealing, you know, what our journey has been emotionally, spiritually, psychologically. What's your path? How do you prepare to get in front of a room full of first responders and share your story? And how do you get to that place where you're able to do it as openly and honestly as you can?
The I think the key is the openness and the honesty. If we can't have that within ourselves and outwards towards others, then mm-hmm. it's just there's no credibility or anything. All of my mm-hmm. talks, I let everybody know from the very beginning that nothing is off the table. I'm not hiding or concealing anything, because mm-hmm. I truly believe that is the key. But one of the things I do, they are emotionally exhausting and draining when I'm done, since I share everything. It's not a death by PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. I do go over some statistics and just very briefly a little bit of who I am. But then I go into my story, my journey, mm-hmm. and where I was, where I went to, and where I am right now. And like I said, it's emotionally exhausting. I'm just spent when I'm done doing a hour to 2 hour presentation, but it's well worth it. One of the things that I do prior to is I was introduced just about 2 years ago to daily meditations. So I do every morning, I do prayer and meditation. I do at least one a day. Mm-hmm. And so I was just out. I just returned from New Orleans and I was in Phoenix. I presented at the Arizona Summit in the Phoenix area 2 weeks ago. And leading up to that, it was just, like I said, I was one of the first presenters of the morning. So just, it worked out perfect. I was able to get my meditation at my hotel before I went to the conference. And it's good. I remember the first time that I ever did a presentation in 2020, right when COVID pretty much started. And I didn't really have a whole lot of the tools like that, the meditation, the faith and everything. And I was never big on public speaking. And I mean, I can talk to you all day long, but just speaking in front of large groups was always something that was very nerve-wracking and difficult for me. Mm-hmm. And I got through that and it was kind of shaky. But like I said, once I started getting some more tools, most notably, like I said, my two favorite ones is just the meditation, the prayer beforehand, and then meditation. And I just think that makes a world of difference. And I highly recommend that to anybody, just whatever your higher power is, to just find your higher power and communicate with them, whether it's Jesus Christ, who's my Lord and Savior, or if it's Buddha or Allah or whoever. Mm-hmm. So just acknowledge that there is one. Do that. Do the meditations. Fall into it and rock and roll.
Fairfield County Trauma Response Team is a nonprofit alliance of mental health professionals dedicated to helping first responders heal from trauma, tragedy, and stress. We help as they manage community crises and the everyday demands of ensuring public health and safety. Established in 2011, FCTRT was formed in response to a call for emotional help from the Stamford Fire Department after a traumatic fatal fire. Less than a year later, the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting occurred, and members again served the first responder community. Most recently, COVID-19 created a need for our support. We provide free educational presentations, pro bono sessions to deal with community disasters, and an extensive referral service to trauma-informed psychotherapists. If you're a responder in Fairfield County and need help dealing with duty-related stress, please reach out to us so you can continue to do the job you love. Visit our website at fctrt.org or find us on Instagram at Fairfield County TRT.
I'm curious, just to tie into that, when you're doing your job as a fire captain, do you use those same tools?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I sure do. Another thing that I incorporate into it is a moral inventory is something that I had learned about a couple of years ago also. Kind of righting the wrongs on my side of the street and fixing things. And it's one of the things in the 12-step program, AA. I went through that, and a lot of people, I was like this with when you hear AA, you're like, I'm not an alcoholic or anything, but you can actually take the word alcohol out of it and put any vice that you have into that 12-step program. And one of the things that taught me about was doing a moral inventory, lifelong moral inventory of things that I haven't done properly, and then making an amends. And whether or not people accept that amends, that's on them, but it's about me cleaning up my side of the street. And I say all that to, now we'll get to the answer to your question there, is daily on shift, 24 hours, when we get to start settling down after dinner time and doing our late watch around the firehouse, when I go into my bedroom, I do a moral inventory of the day, of the shift. I use that to, I do, a lot of people talk about, it's kind of being cliched now, the checkup from the neck up.
Right.
Well, I do a full body scan. So I sit there, I process all of the calls that I've been on, and what I felt during them, what I'm feeling in the moment in my head. And then I just work my way down all the way through. So incorporating that, and then I'll go into, if the good citizens are willing to give me enough time, I'll go from all of that into a prayer and then into a meditation. So those are my three components that I utilize on my shift. And there's other things that I'll do in between if we have a stressful event earlier in the shift that I'll just work on and just try and just talk about it. And that's one of the things I really do. We've always done a lot of, we're known for our dark sense of humor. And I don't do that like I used to. One of the things that I do, I make it a point to just start making just casual chatter about the call when we're en route back to the firehouse. And then I'll grab my crew individually and just check on them. And a lot of times I've learned that, and this is in general also, when you see somebody and you talk to them, you ask them how they're doing. And the biggest lie in the world is I'm fine. Or I'm okay. So I'll ask them that, take them aside individually. Just, I mean, not like, hey, you come here. Just after we get off the truck and everybody goes and gets a few minutes to themselves. And when I just see them out in the bay of the firehouse or around one of the rigs, then I'll talk to them and I'll ask them that. If they say they're fine, I always do this. I just take about 5-10 extra seconds And then I just ask him, I was like, hey, how are you really doing? Mm-hmm. And I cannot stress this enough, how much of a difference that makes, because 9 times out of 10, that's when people will start opening up, because they feel that Captain Moore is Chris Moore, and he's really vested in my well-being, and he's not just asking me how I'm doing. He really cares about me and wants to know how I'm doing, how I'm feeling, how I'm processing that event or whatever. And it really helps to open up and start a lot more conversations.
Critically important. Well, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So, Chris, I've learned that you're interested in adverse childhood experiences, right? We consider that the ACEs. There's a score that comes from that, 0 to 10. How is the ACEs important to you in your understanding of first responders?
I tell you what, we always talk about peeling back the proverbial onion, and that's not enough. We need to peel that onion back until there is nothing. I had always peeled back the onion, thinking that I was doing a lot of good and finding a lot of things. I never knew anything about ACEs until it was the end of April 2022, and it was explained to me and actually did an ACEs test. I always thought that, and I still do, that I had a really had a good childhood. I didn't think I had any issues whatsoever. And then when I did the ACEs test or quiz, I found out that a lot of those things happened to me, but I suppressed them so far down that I had just ignored them or just had forgotten about them. Mm-hmm. And I did realize that, and I think this is where it ties into the first responder and our veteran community, our military, mm-hmm. is I think I felt like I wanted to be the one to save others, because I didn't always at times mm-hmm. feel safe, feel as loved as I think I should have. Didn't feel provided for. And without, it just felt like I missed a lot. I did have a good childhood. Like I said, I'm not bashing my parents, because they didn't know what they didn't know. It's the whole generational thing. So once I learned about all of that, and I kind of like, it's like, wow, me too. That's why I got into the first responder community. I wanted to be a protector of others and help them when they're having bad times. And hearing from other first responders, it's that whole me too thing from them as well.
You know, it's pretty well known among therapists that first responders and military tend to score higher. A higher score means that there's more adverse childhood experiences, just to explain that to the public, that score higher than the general population. And most of us therapists that work with first responders or military, we absolutely see like the connection between going without, or maybe if there was some neglect, or there was observation of abuse, or if there was any sexual abuse, drug use, divorce, that those individuals then kind of have a need to fix the problem, and they want to give to others. It's sort of like a vicarious, if I give to you, if I help you, if I protect you, then I'm somehow helping the child within me. But it's not a conscious thing. But I do think it's why a lot of, first responders go into, their field of choice, and also military.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. And I really believe, and I'm a second generation first responder. My father was law enforcement. So I'm kind of seeing that, mm-hmm. that pattern there, the generational, the like I said, we don't know what we don't know. And my father, I'm sure he had from his generation. His father did the same thing mm-hmm. to him. So it was kind of what was raised to him or passed right. down to him. And he did the same to me. And I know that some of the things, I wasn't always the best dad to my son. He's getting ready to turn 19 years old, but we have a pretty darn good relationship. And I assure him that now that I know of things, the generational trauma stops with me and with him, because I'm teaching him since I've learned about it. Mm-hmm. I know I have nowhere near as much expertise or anything as you, Doc, but I know enough to change my ways and be a better, not just a better man, but a better person, a better human being. And I understand a lot more why things happened to me. I wasn't deserving of a lot of the things, and I don't think it was done to me because I because my dad was a bad person. Like I said, I just think it was because he didn't really mm-hmm. understand. So
mm-hmm. right. These patterns are passed down.
Yes,
patterns
ma'am.
Of parenting are that tend to be passed down, just like patterns of drinking, drugging. I think it really takes looking at oneself, looking at one's history, being open to that. These are the things that you've done, that you've learned to look within yourself. You've learned to become vulnerable. You actually give permission to others to be vulnerable by, you know, presenting your story. And it's great to have those qualities in a leader. You know, we need more of that, definitely. You know, for you to be vulnerable, it really gives permission to others.
Yes, ma'am. Like I said, I think that's the key when they see that we're talking about being vulnerable, but being vulnerable makes me and others that are likewise like-minded a safe person. Mm-hmm. And people know they can come to me mm-hmm. and I'm not going to judge them. I'm not going to betray their confidence. Unless, as we all know, they're wanting to hurt themselves mm-hmm. or others, or they give me permission. But I'm a very safe person, and we need more of that. We need more safe people in safe places where people can go and express their feelings and be vulnerable. It's natural that all the traumas or that we see, we're exposed to, we're going to have our hurts, and we need these healthy ways like that. Mm-hmm. So many times we've trained as a society, our mind is trained to listen in order to form a response. And instead, we need to retrain our minds where we can actually listen to understand. Mm-hmm. People don't always need a response. They just need to be heard. Mm-hmm. So when I started doing that, because I used to be one of the worst when people would talk to me, I'm like listening, trying to think, okay, I got to say this, got to say that. Mm-hmm. Well, once I learned to start doing more of the act of listening mm-hmm. and just letting them get everything out. And I used to be a very big BSer. And if I didn't know the answer to questions back then, I would BS my way out of it. And that wasn't with the mental health aspect. That was prior to me getting into all this. But people don't need that. And there's still a lot of people out there that continue to show those patterns and do that. and it's just not healthy, and it's not helping our cause and our mission for giving these safe places and resources to others.
Yeah, I want to underscore that as a leader, how important it is for you to be approachable, which you apparently are, obviously are. From my experience working with different leaders who were not approachable, it just made it nearly impossible to ever have these conversations that you're talking about. And, I think that contributes, at least it contributed in my case, to, job satisfaction, to feeling safe, to feeling like I was able to, express my concerns or whatever was happening in a particular shift or at a particular moment. It's so important to have a leader, supervisor who we can approach and who's willing to listen and at least be present, even if they're not a therapist, but they can just listen and hear what we have to say. So I just wanted to acknowledge that.
Good. Thank you.
Let's shift gears a little bit. You are an alumnus of Save a Warrior. Can you talk a little bit about what that organization does and how you are connected with them?
Yeah. So Save a Warrior, I actually attribute them to actually saving this warrior right here, saving my life. And I just came up on the 2-year anniversary. It was March 16th of 2022. And that was while I was doing my speakings, engagements, and writing articles and podcasts and everything, thought I was doing very well. And I started having a relapse of my post-traumatic stress. My therapist several months earlier, she wanted to we started backing away probably about 6 months prior to that, going from every other week to once a month. And then she recommended we go to a as needed basis. That was the biggest mistake that I've ever made, because the hardest phone call I ever made initially was calling that therapist and getting those two words, help me out. So when we went to an as needed basis, I had a hard time picking that phone up again. It felt like it weighed 5,000 pounds all over again. And we were coming up on the anniversary of another very bad call that I had previously processed, but for some reason, as we were coming up on the anniversary, it was just all hitting me. I didn't pick up the phone, make the phone call. March 16th of 2022, I tried to take my life and woke up later that day in the hospital, hooked up to machines and everything. I spent several days in the hospital. Well, a friend of mine, he is retired law enforcement out on the West Coast. He reached out to me when he found out about it, and he told me about an organization. It actually started in Malibu, California. It's called Save a Warrior, and the founder is Jake Clark. And Jake wanted to try and end the veteran suicide rate, the 22 a day, and help with first responders. He knew there was an issue with first responders as well, and he actually started the organization out of his trunk of his car in California. In his background, he has a military background. He was, I think he was some Secret Service also, and law enforcement. So now he's given his whole life to Save a Warrior. They have since, they went from the trunk of his car to a facility in California, and they've since relocated. They're in Hillsboro, Ohio now, which, if I'm not mistaken, I'm not really great with geography, but I think it's about 40 to 45 minutes east of Cincinnati. So it's a nonprofit organization. They take veterans from all across the country. You have to qualify for it, but it's, if you have post-traumatic stress and or suicide or suicidal ideations. And when I went in 2022, they were taking first responders from all across the country as well. Since then, they have limited the first responders to the state of Ohio. And all I had to do when I submitted my paperwork online, they reached out to me. We set up a phone call. We did a interview to see what was going on. And they said, yeah, you're a candidate for our program. Mm-hmm. And from there, we worked on a date. All I had to do was get out to Ohio. Mm-hmm. I flew into Cincinnati. They picked me up at the airport, took me to their property in Hillsboro, Ohio. And it was myself and seven other male first responders. And they do cohorts for either all male or all female cohorts. They're all separated. And at the beginning of the program, it's only a 72-hour program. Hmm. And I was just like thinking in my mind, 72 hours, like I've done several years of therapy at this point, and I just had a suicide attempt earlier. How is 72 hours going to help me? Mm-hmm. And they asked us before we started the 72 hours, like who's skeptical of this or whatever. And I mean, I was just being open and honest and raised my hand, and they asked why. And I told them exactly what I just said is years of therapy hasn't really got me where I need to be. And you think 72 hours. So they asked me, they said, that's a fair question. We ask that you just lean in, be open, be honest, and play the game. Like, absolutely. I want it to fix myself. I want it to get back on the right track and get even better. So did the program. That's where I learned about ACEs. And before we started, we did an ACEs. And then at the end of the 72 hours, we did an ACEs. And that's where we go, how I mentioned earlier about the onion. Once I peeled that onion down to nothing at the end of the 72 hours, my ACEs score jumped up by 3 points. And it's just really, really eye-opening. The patient there was a safe place. They assured us that it was all safe men that were in my cohort. We were all going through a lot of the same things. And it was a whole lot of the me too. And when somebody is sharing something that happened to them in their childhood or adult life, we're sitting there and we're thinking the whole thing. Like I said, when I do my talks, it's the me toos, and just hearing that and seeing them being open and vulnerable really helped each and every one of us do that. But they explain how when we have these things happen to us, we shame, guilt, and denial are like three of the really big things. And I had always kind of had knew that going into this, that they were, I always call those, I would say firefighter, but they're first responder killers. Mm-hmm. Shame and denial when we have those three in mind. Mm-hmm. We have an event that happens to us. We deny it. Mm-hmm. And we find something to help us cope with it. And most of us, it's not a healthy coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. So they open our eyes up to a lot of us. And one of the analogies they use is we just keep going in this vicious circle until we finally find some way to escape that. So they help us with that through a lot of their trainings and everything. And it wasn't the program was 72 hours that we were actually on site, but it's actually, we do the work daily.
Responder Resilience is your place for insightful discussions for emergency services professionals, including law enforcement, EMS, fire service, 911 telecommunicators, animal control, rescue squads, K-9 officers, corrections, trauma-informed therapists, and agency leaders. We bring you leading experts and influencers in emergency services, sharing knowledge and tools to improve the culture of wellness and to inspire excellence in leadership. Tune in live every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time for the weekly premiere on YouTube and Facebook. Or stream episodes anytime on ResponderTV.com or on your favorite podcast platform. Stay current with hot topics, informative content, and get valuable insights on how to lead a healthier life both on and off the job by subscribing to us on YouTube and Facebook. Responder Resilience is committed to our family of public safety professionals. Remember to like and subscribe today.
They're the ones who taught me about meditation. It's called warrior meditation, and they want at least one a day, but recommend two. And I make sure I get at least one in. Usually I'll try and get my second one in throughout the day. But I had three vices going into there that was I always use to tap into my internal drugstore to get that dopamine rush to make me feel better when I was struggling all the time and mm-hmm. I didn't know what was going on. And the vices for me was like many first responders, unfortunately, our culture is big on alcohol. Mm-hmm. And I wish we could change that somehow. And I know we're chipping away at it, but I used alcohol to numb myself. I spent a lot of money and ran up a lot of debt because that made me feel good, just buying what I wanted and doing what I wanted until the bill came. And that dopamine rush just like completely went away. Mm-hmm. And the third thing, and I'm not proud, I'm very ashamed of all of these, but especially this one, was sex. It was extramarital affair. Having the just a connection like that at times was a rush. Yeah. And it was all three of those things were horrible. And they taught us about recognizing those things and kind of recognizing our higher power and doing just living differently and going about things differently. I don't want to give up a whole lot of the program to people listening out there and watching the podcast that might go through the program. Mm-hmm. It to me, like I said, it was a life changer, a lifesaver. And I highly recommend it. If there's anybody on the fence that's dealing with all those, like I said, for first responders, you have to be in the state of Ohio as of right now. But veterans, they'll take veterans from anywhere. You just got to go to their website and submit your application on there, and they'll reach out to you right away. So,
fortuitous that you got in while the window was still open for responders from all over the country.
Yeah. So. And there's so many other great organizations out there as well. Save a Warrior isn't the end all be all. But they're the ones that worked for me. It doesn't mean that others wouldn't have worked for me or been great for other people. So
I'll toss out one last question for you, and then we'll start to wrap up. And that's in what way, especially as leaders in emergency services, in what ways are we our brothers and sisters keepers? And what's that responsibility, and how do you live up to that responsibility every day?
That's kind of like we use the term, actually hearing it a lot more, the what is your why? Mm-hmm. So my why is my people. Oh. I honestly, sincerely care about the citizens that we serve and that we protect, where we're providing a great service for them. But I put my people ahead of myself. And right there with the citizens, because if I don't put them ahead of myself, it should be we instead of me. Mm-hmm. So I take care of my crew. And when I say I take care of them, it's not just like, hey, I'm buying dinner tonight or anything like that, but it's taking care of this also. I mean, we take care of the bellies of everybody in the firehouse and all that. But it's all about taking care of them. And it's not just talking the talk. So many people are still to this day just talking the talk. The mental health and wellness and everything is the hot topic that's going around over the past few years. And it's growing, and I'm so happy for that, until I find out a lot of times some of these people that are talking the talk, they're not always walking the walk. Mm-hmm. And it's like it was Mike Tyson had said years ago, everybody has the answer till the test until they get punched in the jaw. And a lot of people think they're doing the right thing, or they toot their horn that they're doing this for their people or for themselves and everything. And then when they really get pushed into a corner, they're not that person they were to be. And I really pride myself on being that person that not only talks the talk, I walk the walk. And my guys know that they can reach out to me and count on me at any time of the day or night. I just got off shift this morning, a 24-hour shift at 0700. Last night we got back from a call at midnight. And I stayed up with one of the other guys. We just started having a personal mental health journey conversation until 2:38 in the morning. So almost 2 hours and 40 minutes. We didn't have any calls during that time. And we stayed up until, like I said, almost 3 in the morning, just discussing everything. And he's I've known him for several years now. But he was even more impressed and just not necessarily impressed. That might not be the best word, but thankful and grateful. And our bond and our connection grew even more, even though we've been working together for quite some time and already had a great relationship. Mm-hmm. I think that's the key to it, is just making yourself present. And LT, you know that from our conversation before, not only do I make myself present for my firefighters, but I make myself present. I can't even talk now, to everybody across the country by putting my number out there, my personal cell phone number for people that want to call me or text me or anything. Mm-hmm. And it's just who I am. And I think that's who more people need to be. That open person that got into this career. And I know this goes back to the beginning of the conversation with the ACEs. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we get into the career because we wanted to save everybody subconsciously. We didn't know all the stuff to it. But, and I know that's a good portion of why I did it, but I know deep down inside, I do have a true servant's heart. Mm-hmm. I want to serve the world. I love serving my community and everybody there. And I love serving people. I do have to remember at times though, my self-care. And anybody that's in this, this field of doing the mental health and wellness for others, we need to remember our self-care and that's a big component that I had to teach myself. And I've learned now that self-care is not selfish. So taking care of myself makes me even better.
Absolutely.
Other right. people.
Yeah. So it's hard to get, if you don't, if you're not healthy yourself, you know, mentally, physically, it's really hard to be there for other people. So it's, you know, to model that is wonderful.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, Captain Chris Moore, before we close out, where can people get in touch with you? And do you have any upcoming speaking engagements or any other projects you want to share about?
Yeah, mentioned earlier, just got back from Phoenix and New Orleans. My next speaking engagement that's on the horizon is three weeks away, I believe. No, a month away. I'm sorry. It's in April in Ontario, Canada. So instead of just being a national touring speaker, I'll be an international touring speaker. But it's the Conference of Hope in Ontario, Aurora, Ontario, Canada. And I believe that is actually, I'm going to just say it's towards the end of April. I don't want to say the date right now and I give the wrong date and mess that up. But so I have that on the horizon. Then a few other ones are popping up right now. I have a big one right here in my hometown is September 4th, 5th, and 6th, they've always done the Department of Justice has always done a big law enforcement mental health and wellness conference here in Norfolk, Virginia. Mm-hmm. And they are changing it up this year to include all first responders. Nice. And have reached out to me to be a keynote on September 5th. So that's going to be a very big one for me. Just because it'll be my first time, even though I'm always an open book and have a lot of stuff out there on social media, I've never presented face-to-face. I'll have individual things with people within my organization, but I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people that I know personally that are going to be out in the crowd there for that conference. Yeah. So that'll be pretty intense for me. Like I said, I'm always exhausted and drained, but I know that one's going to hit me a lot more so, but in a good way. I'll do my prayer and meditation ahead of time. And so a couple ways that people can get in touch with me is my social media. Send me a request or whatever. It's just Chris Moore on Facebook. I'm an old person. I'm a dinosaur when it comes to social media. If they still had MySpace, I would be on MySpace, but I'm only on Facebook and LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. I am not on Instagram. A lot of people ask me about the Instagram and putting videos on TikTok or whatever, but I'm strictly Facebook and LinkedIn. You can find me on there. It's just Chris Moore. I do a lot of posts on social media about my journey, and usually I post a weekly video just talking about some kind of mental health and wellness for first responders and for the family dynamic of first responders as well. And then probably one of the greatest things that's actually reaching out further than social media, believe it or not, is I put my personal telephone number, my cell phone number out there at all of the conferences I go to and then all over the social media. And my number is 757-536-3373. And I will always listen. Take me up on that. If you call and you don't get me on the telephone, please leave a message or send a text. It's either I'm on a phone call, I'm in church, or I'm in a meeting or something, but I will answer you back. So
we're on a call.
Yeah, we're on a call. That's right. I'm still active 30 some years and still active. So it's nice to know that I can go at any time if my body starts breaking down more or whatever, but I'm still loving the job right now. And like I said, serving the citizens, but more importantly, serving the members of my department and my crew.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you, Captain Chris Moore. We thank you so much for all you're doing out there for first responders, for your own department, your own crew, your own shift. And we wish you continued success.
Thank you guys very much. I really appreciate you, LT, and you, Doc, for having me on the podcast. And it's very important what you guys are doing. And I love that you put this together with your team and doing these podcasts to spread the word. So thank you, guys. And I hope you have a blessed day and everybody be safe out there.
Thank you.
You as well.
Thank you.
Remember to like and subscribe, YouTube, Responder Resilience, Facebook, Responder Wellness, Inc., and Responder TV, bbsradio.com, and all the podcast platforms. And go to our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. Till the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself, take care.